It was a daring raid, even by Israeli standards. The commandos flew to their target, Entebbe Airport in Uganda, 2,300 miles away from home base. They freed over 100 hostages, killed their Palestinian or pro-Palestinian hijackers, and returned to Israel, which then claimed full official responsibility for the operation. The raid was not, as Ugandan President Idi Amin put it, Zionist aggression against a free African state. It was not, as the Soviet news agency TASS put it, the latest act of piracy by the Israeli military. It was not, as the Somali ambassador to Uganda put it, collusion between Israel and the United States, an invasion of an independent African country. Whatever other descriptions may yet be attached to this dramatic and successful mission, it really had a single overriding purpose, and that was obviously the rescue of more than 100 innocent people kidnapped by pro-Palestinian terrorists who wanted to exchange them for other terrorists held in the prisons of five different countries: Israel, West Germany, France, Kenya, and Switzerland. The Israelis broke with their own policy last week and agreed to bargain with the terrorists. But according to Israeli sources here, when it became clear that the terrorists would not bargain, but would continue to insist on their original ultimatum, the Israelis switched tactics. They alerted a special commando force to come up with military options for freeing the hostages. And they put one of those options into effect: a surprising post-midnight raid into the heart of Africa. It took 36 minutes from touchdown in Entebbe to take off. And it will be admired or resented, discussed at any rate, for a long time to come. The consequences are obvious. For Israel, it served as a tonic, a unifying force reminiscent of the 67 war. For the Palestinian members of a rejectionist Arab front, refusing all dealings with Israel, it was a major setback, an acute embarrassment. For the countries of East Africa, it was a trauma that affects relations among Kenya, Uganda, and Somalia. For Idi Amin, it was a stinging personal defeat, which may end up shortening his own tenure in power. For the United States, it was a special kind of birthday present, a reminder that, despite Watergate and Vietnam, free men can still act to protect their people and interests. Top officials were clearly elated. President Ford expressed his great satisfaction that the passengers had been saved and a senseless act of terrorism thwarted. Other officials were delighted that, at a moment of apparent helplessness in the face of terrorism, Israel performed an act of daring, a surgical strike that could prod other free nations to act in defense of their own interests. In this connection, one idea floated this past weekend may have some appeal: establishing an international police force against hijacking. This force, to be proposed by the United States, but open to all countries, anxious to put a hammerlock on terrorism in the skies, would be able to move against hijackers anywhere in the world. It would serve as a morale boost for those countries who feel they cannot act alone. It would discourage potential hijackers. It would obviate unilateral action, such as Israel's last weekend, which might offend certain governments. Beginning her third century, America can show that she too can act against hijacking in defense of her interests. Now this message.
Mercy sakes, this rubber duck gonna be late unless one of you cowboys can help me.
Well, I was heading for a gig in my four-wheel rig, but I was running late getting down. Because with all of them folks on the boulevard, we weren't never going to get across town. But when you got your Midland CB rig, well, you got about a million friends. And you don't have to be no cotton picker just to set them in a sweat in your hands.
Join Midland Convoy and Midland CB.
Well, I could have sat on that ramp till the leaves turned brown, because them cars was wall to wall. But I had me a Midland CB rig, and them truckers all heard my call. If we hadn't have slipped in between them semis, I never would have broke that line. But with a little help from the Midland convoy, Rubber Duck was right on time, 10-4.
Trees on, you good buddy. You truck them safe now, you hear?
Join Midland convoy, get Midland CB.
When you get a Midland CB, you get a convoy buddy. Come on.
FCC license required.
First Line Report. Have a good day. I am Arvin Kalb, CBS News.
Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. A Libyan airliner was hijacked this morning on a domestic flight and later landed on the Mediterranean island of Mallorca, where the hijacker, according to authorities at the Palma Airport, surrendered. The hijacker, identified as a man who opposed to the Libyan regime of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, turned himself over to airport police and gave up two toy pistols and two knives. The police say nobody was injured among the 86 people aboard the plane. Sometime earlier, the plane had landed briefly at an Algerian military airbase after being refused permission to land at the Tunis and Algiers airports. The base is the headquarters of the Algerian Air Force. Whether the plane refueled there is not known. Israel is taking new measures against air piracy, and we'll hear about them from Bruno Wassertile in Tel Aviv.
Israel will impose sanctions on airlines flying to and from Israel that fail to take standard security precautions. This in an obvious move to avoid a repeat of last week's hijacking in which armed terrorists boarded an Air France flight at Athens. Under new legislation proposed by Transport Minister Gad Yaakovi, international carriers whose security standards are considered lax will have restrictions imposed on their operations here and possibly have their landing rights curbed altogether. Today, Air France announced that its Tel Aviv to Paris flights would no longer be stopping at Athens. It's noted here that El Al, the Israeli national carrier, spends upwards of $10 million a year on its security setup, and that the first time an El Al plane was hijacked in 1968 was also the last. In Jerusalem today, the funeral is taking place of the New York-born, Israeli-raised lieutenant colonel who was killed at Entebbe Airport while leading the rescue mission that freed more than 100 hostages. Bruno Wassertile for CBS News in Tel Aviv.
The four-day summit meeting of the Organization of African Unity on the island of Mauritius ended this morning in an atmosphere of disunity. No problems were solved and several new problems developed. The conference approved more than 70 resolutions, but many of them were diluted, and the conferees took no firm stand on such major issues as South Africa's racial policies. The South African government today ended the compulsory use of the Afrikaans language in black schools. That was the spark that led to severe racial violence last month. Jimmy Carter has been meeting today in Hershey, Pennsylvania, with Democratic governors attending the National Governors Conference. Bill Plant reports.
Jimmy Carter's appearance before the Democratic governors was another demonstration of party unity. It was one of Carter's last-ditch rivals during the primaries, Governor Marvin Mandel of Maryland, a supporter of Jerry Brown, who offered a resolution supporting Carter this morning. The governors adopted it unanimously. Brown and another of his supporters, Governor Edwin Edwards of Louisiana, were not at the meeting. In the face of all this, Carter once again warned of overconfidence. Carter also told reporters that the next candidate he'll interview personally in his search for a vice presidential candidate is Senator Walter Mondale of Minnesota. And he told the Democratic governors that he favors unified payments to meet the necessities of welfare in the cities to be guaranteed by the federal government, reducing the load over a period of time on the states. Bill Plant, CBS News, with the Carter campaign in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yesterday at his home in Plains, Georgia, Carter spent several hours talking with Senator Edmund Muskie of Maine, one of several people the nominee apparent is considering as possible vice presidential candidates. Carter told reporters afterward he saw no incompatibility with Muskie, who was Hubert Humphrey's running mate in 1968. Both he and Muskie, Carter added, had a clear understanding that neither was under any obligation to make a decision immediately. He said his list, which now contains at least five names, may be expanded before the Democratic National Convention opens in New York next Monday. The Royal Yacht Britannia, arriving from Bermuda, docks this morning at Philadelphia, and Queen Elizabeth, accompanied by Prince Philip, begins her bicentennial visit to the United States. Lori Yapchensky of Station WCAU has details.
Philadelphia is doing its best for the Queen's arrival, rolling out the red carpet onto its littered streets. Sanitation workers and other municipal employees are continuing the job slowdown, which began the first of the month. And the big bicentennial weekend has left behind it tons of trash which remain on city streets, even though in some areas volunteers are doing their best to remove it. But what the city is lacking in appearance, it will try to make up for in ceremony. Mayor Frank Rizzo plans to greet the Royal Yacht Britannia as it docks in the Delaware River. Then he'll escort the Queen and Prince Philip on a tour of historical sites. Her Majesty is to present a birthday gift from the people of Britain, a bicentennial bell to hang in the visitor's center at Independence National Park. But the highlight of her visit will come this afternoon when she visits Independence Hall, the site where her ancestor, George III, was denounced as a tyrant 200 years ago. Lori Yapchensky for CBS News, Philadelphia.
After spending the night aboard the Britannia, the Queen tomorrow goes on to Washington, where Hal Walker reports that President Ford's attention is divided between the Queen's visit and another big upcoming event.
President Ford will spend the first half of his day after the long holiday weekend meeting with members of the White House staff. Two major concerns occupy the president this week. One, the continuation of strategy mapping for the forthcoming Republican convention. And two, preparations for the bicentennial visit of England's Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip. Because of the Queen's visit, most of the political chores this week will be handled by aides who will have to decide what role Mr. Ford should play in the last-minute efforts to woo Republican delegates at next month's convention in Kansas City. Neither President Ford nor Ronald Reagan is expected to have enough delegates for the nomination when the convention opens. The royal party from England is scheduled to arrive at the White House tomorrow morning. The Queen and her husband will lunch with the President and Mrs. Ford, and in the evening will be guests at a white tie dinner. They'll return the favor by hosting a formal dinner for the Fords on Thursday night, and it is expected that the President will bid farewell to the Queen in Newport, Rhode Island on Saturday. And so for this week, matters historical and social will overshadow those political. Hal Walker, CBS News, the White House.
Ronald Reagan tonight makes a nationwide paid political broadcast, which he describes as important. Reagan taped the address in advance yesterday in Hollywood, saying afterward that he would prefer to have done it closer to the Republican National Convention, but he had to take the time when it was available. Kansas City is drawing close, he said, and there are still a lot of uncommitted delegates. The United States Supreme Court ends its current term today with a final burst of rulings on police searches. Fred Graham reports.
The Supreme Court has been unpredictable this year, except in one general line of cases. In questions involving the authority of the police versus the rights of suspects, the court has almost always come down on the side of the police. If that holds true today, it could be an important one for the police, because the court has five cases left to decide involving the authority of the police to conduct searches and seizures. 2 points at issue involve border searches and searches of cars that have been towed away on routine traffic offenses. But potentially most important is an appeal which asks the Supreme Court to overturn a 62-year-old doctrine that requires that all evidence seized illegally by the police be excluded from use in court. The Supreme Court has now been asked to let trial judges admit such evidence when the illegality of the police's search was unintentional. And defense lawyers have warned that this would encourage the police to make illegal searches. So the Supreme Court term could remain controversial right up to the end. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
Democratic Representative Les Aspin of Wisconsin, often critical of U.S. military policy, has come out against allegations that the Soviet Navy is growing faster and getting better than the United States Navy. Appearing on the CBS Morning News, Aspin said it's just the reverse.
I think they clearly are ahead in almost every major category of ships right now. But what the study shows and what the figures show is that the trend is not against the United States Navy, and in fact, if you look at what's happened in the last 5 years, and more particularly if you look at what's going to happen at the next 5 years and the next 10 years, it shows that the United States Navy will be growing and getting younger and other things, whereas the Russian Navy is the one that's going to be in decline.
A Navy spokesman takes issue with Aspin, calls his argument fallacious, and says the study Aspin referred to compares mostly similar systems on both sides instead of systems that oppose each other. The Law Enforcement Assistance Administration will hold hearings that could eventually affect the makeup of state police departments across the country. At issue is the refusal of South Carolina to hire women as state troopers. Federal law forbids LEAA from giving funds to a state agency that discriminates on the basis of sex unless there's a compelling reason for it. South Carolina claims there is a compelling reason. Officials claim women are not qualified to be state troopers. Soviet Russia today launched its two men into orbit aboard Soyuz 21. The assumption is that they will board the Salyut 5 space laboratory orbited June 25th. The men aboard the Salyut 21 are Boris Volynov and Vitaly Zhulabov.